everybody. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. My name's Alison McCabe and I'm the current chair for tonight. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this land and pay our respect to our elders past and present. I'm just going to introduce the panel. To my immediate right is Steve Lehman. To my immediate left is Mark Carlin. And to my far left is Trish McBride. So we comprise the panel tonight. We've got a full panel, so there are no apologies. Any declarations of interest? No. We've also filled out the declaration of interest forms, and they will be on Council's website. We have three items for consideration tonight. Item one is 2-4 Cliff Road, North Wollongong, for the Novotel. North Beach Novotel and the addition of a suite to the rooftop level. Item two is 35 Yellongong Street in West Wollongong for demolition of the existing dwelling and erection of 10 multi-unit dwellings. And if I correct on that one, that is for advice only. I think that's how that report read. On item two, the panel isn't the consent authority. This has been reported to the panel for us to give advice to council officers. The reason that we're not the consent authority on that matter is that there are only two submissions and the variation to the development standard isn't greater than 10%. So in that case, that isn't a matter that normally comes before the panel, but under Wollongong's policy, they do send these types of applications up to us to provide some fresh set of eyes and advice. So that matter's an advice one. Item three is for 18 Hopetoun Street, Woonoona, which is the demolition of the existing residence and erection of four multi-dwelling housing unit, and that's a matter that has previously been considered by the panel twice before and has come back up to the panel tonight, and that is a matter for determination because there is a clause 4.6 variation. Just a few rules for the night. Can everyone turn off the mobile phone? These meetings are being recorded. A copy of the recording will be uploaded onto Council's website, probably within 3 or 4 days of the meeting. The recordings will be made available to other persons where access is in accordance with the relevant regulations. On all items, we have a number of people addressing the panel. You've got 5 minutes to address the panel. The way we do this is normally anyone who's made a submission will be asked to address first, and then we provide an opportunity for the applicant and their representatives to address us. They usually get a little bit longer because we often ask them a lot of questions and ask them to respond to any issues that may have been raised in the submissions. People have 5 minutes to address us, and it'd be appreciated if people can kind of hang on to that time frame. General expectations that we all observe basic common courtesy. Please don't talk over each other or make, comments while people are talking. You may hear opinions that you violently disagree with. Please just listen and respect other people's opinions and don't be making inappropriate comments. Also, please refrain from making any comments or reflections against either people who may be making applications, who have made submissions to applications, who may not even be here. The panel isn't interested. It's really important to understand that this isn't a debate. This is about the panel informing itself. To understand both the application in front of us and all those issues so that we can make either the appropriate decision or recommendations to council. We're interested in the issues, not personalities. We're going to deal with each matter in order. Just understand the panel's been to the site. We've actually had a bit of time to understand the plans and we've actually got copies of all your submissions as well and taken a little bit of time to understand the context of the site. So We might ask you where you are from or what house you're talking about, but in some of those cases we will understand kind of orientation and where things are. With that, the way the meeting is run is that we'll hear and hear each matter in turn, as I said. We'll then close the meeting from the public's perception, and we will continue to discuss and formulate a resolution on those matters, and then those resolutions will be posted on Council's website, usually within a day or two of the meeting. So with that, I think that's all the nuts and bolts for the beginning of the meeting. I'll get on to item one. Now, I don't have any people who have registered to speak as a submitter. Do I have anybody who's here other than the applicant's representatives on 2-4 Cliff? Did you want to speak at all tonight, or we've got the submissions? So are you representative of the flat building that made the sorry? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Rightio. Jeff Mead. Did you have your architect with you as well?
Yes, he can come up at the same time.
Yeah, that suits. In your hands.
Thank you.
As I said, we've been out and are familiar with the site.
No. Thank you, Madam Chair, panel. We've obviously reviewed the assessment report in detail and we'll work through some of the issues raised in that. Obviously, we strongly reject the recommendation of the report, recommending refusal of the application, and we'd like to talk to some of the assessment and give a bit of background as to where we've been with this application and where we've arrived at. It's an application that we had pre-application dialogue with council staff, and we have continued that dialogue through the assessment of the application. It would appear, reading the report, that's not clear in the report to the extent that there's two key issues raised that really, in our view, lead to the recommendation for refusal. The first is heritage impact, and the second I would bundle as being related to the Clause 4.6 variation and the impacts that emanate from the height breach. Firstly, dealing with heritage, the dialogue in terms of heritage was entered early, and we were well aware of the issues with that, noting that the issue with heritage is essentially the proximity to the beach and the Bathers Pavilion, which is a state item. The impact with that, the application was referred to New South Wales Heritage Office, who we would expect most weight would be given on their commentary on the application. They responded to the application and did raise the issue of shadow on the heritage item, but made a very prescriptive request, which was to set back the eastern edge of the upper level, the proposed additional suite, by an additional 1.5 metres. We immediately went away and did that, and we were of the view that satisfied their request and their recommendation and made made good their concerns. At the same time as that, we had dialogue with Council about the architectural design of the addition. The design approach that had been taken was to differentiate this suite from the levels below. That design approach was rejected by Council staff, and so again, we immediately went to approaching this to make it a subtle addition to the upper level to match the building below. And we say that it would not be an obvious addition in the context of the scale of the actual building. In terms of the heritage impact, you would have seen the shadow diagrams. The shadow diagrams show that there is some shadow cast by the existing building on the Bathers Pavilion and the beach in the afternoon. The shadow diagrams quite helpfully show the additional shadow caused by the addition. And we could only describe that additional shadow as negligible. To look at it in percentage terms, we'd be looking at a very minor percentage of the existing shadow that is caused by the additional level. Turning to the 4.6, one very important piece of background that is not clear in the report is that at the time the 2009 LEP was established and gazetted, the height limit on the site changed from 11 metres under the former REP to 24 metres under the LEP. At the time the 24-metre height limit was established, the building existed as it does today with a 31-metre height. I think we see this sometimes in planning. Makes absolutely no sense that we've got an existing building that's going nowhere, yet we've applied a height limit that is some 7 metres lower than the building that exists on the site. The design of this proposal essentially tries to fit on a part of the building where you would have seen on your site view today. There is actually a frame on that upper level, and yes, we're filling that out with floor space, but effectively the addition is within the height of the existing building, and we say that's a very strong ground in the sense that the planning control that was applied did not make sense at the time and does not make sense today in terms of applying a limit that's lower than a building that exists on the site. In terms of the impacts from the height, I think that they can be broken down into, obviously, the shadow impact, which I've dealt with in the context of the heritage comments, where I say the addition is negligible. And in terms of view impact, there's a detailed view analysis that's been prepared. It shows, at worst, the loss in view angle from the properties that enjoy very expansive ocean views, at most, is about 4% of an existing view. But not just taking my word for it, the staff report deals with view loss in quite a bit of detail, particularly from that building at number 3-5 Coromel Street. And just to quote a few comments out of that from page 6 onwards, a couple of important sentences. The impact on views lost could be described as minor. Substantial coastal views, including views in which the interface between land and water is visible, would be retained after construction of the proposed development, will result in minor loss of coastal views. The proposal is compliant with the 3-1 FSR for the site. And there's also a note that's very important, which is that the land to the southwest of the site, on the opposite side of Burke Street, has planning controls that have a 32-metre height limit, which we would say, given the buildings that exist there, are very likely to be taken up at some point in the future. Now, those sites along the southwestern side of Burke Street sit between the subject site and number 3-5 Coromel Street. So we say that the assessment clearly says that the impact from the proposal is minor, but in the future you're going to have development that is in fact higher than even the existing Novotel intervening between 3-5 Coromel Street and the subject site. In applying the tenacity principles, I'd also say when you look at the angles from 3-5 Coromel Street towards the site, effectively that view line is across several side boundaries. And again, we would say the substantive view is to the coast and is not looking across the Novotel site. That's across several side boundaries, whereas you well know the tenacity principles place a bit less weight. In terms of the bulk and scale issue, there's several comments throughout the staff report that deal with that. Just to again quote a couple of those, in dealing with the DCP controls, the staff report, there's a DCP control titled building depth and bulk, which we would say would be the test for bulk. The sentence there is, despite the proposed floor plate, the objectives of this part are satisfied as the resultant built form is articulated by balconies on the eastern facade. There's a comment there that although the works occupy existing roof area, the additional floor area has setbacks well over the minimum required under this clause. That's the commentary on bulk. The DCP assessment also talks about, as you'd well know, there's specific controls in the DCP on view lines and view corridors. And the commentary there, which is in Attachment 5 to your report, again says that none of those key corridors are affected in any way by the proposal. So the staff report itself concludes that the bulk and scale of the proposal is acceptable. Well, that's our reading of it anyway. Just finally, the application is driven by the zone objectives and the objectives for the city centre. The site is in a tourist zone. It's in the SP3 zone. That zone was applied to the site for obvious reason that this is key area within the LGA and it's geared towards tourist uses. Now, what's driving this proposal is the Novotel's existing lack of ability to meet certain needs for accommodation, being a high-end, large presidential suite, as it is described. This demand has come with, obviously, Wollongong growing as a centre, as a city, and that need, like the City of Sydney, Parramatta and other city centres, brings with it the types of needs of large cities, and that means that visitation from dignitaries, performers, etc., has really increased the demand for this to the extent that the Novotel has a situation where they often can't meet the needs, and so people are travelling from Sydney to here in terms of meeting accommodation needs. So we say the proposal's squarely in line with the objectives of the zone. It's also squarely in line with the objectives for the city centre, which are set out in clause 8.1, page 15 of the report, where the objectives are littered with aims to increase tourism opportunities, strengthen the regional position of the city centre, to economically revitalise the centre and so on. And we say this proposal is doing just that. So when we place what we say is simply a breach of a height control, which the proposal is not, in fact, increasing the height of the building, that breach is in place. When we balance that against the impacts, and as I've read to you several comments in the staff report, that view loss is minor, that Balkan scale is acceptable, the shadow, as I have said, is negligible, and the Heritage Office accepts with a 1.5 metre setback, which we've done, is acceptable. I think we need to put large emphasis on the objectives, both of the zone and the city centre objectives under the LEP. On that basis, we strongly oppose the recommendation and seek the panel's approval of the application. I'd be more than happy to respond to any specific questions you might have.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. That's clear enough. Now, do we have panel questions? Anybody?
I have a question.
Yep, go.
Have you considered alternative solutions, other options for provision of this suite?
Yes, we have. So in terms of a suite like this, obviously the prime position for it is at the upper level to enjoy the expansive views and so on that are available. That said, the remainder of the roof area on the northern side of the hotel has a lot of infrastructure, communications infrastructure and so on, most of those on very long leases, as you would well be aware is the case with communications facilities. Essentially, breaking those leases is not an option, and so that part of the roof is not available. Equally, this part of the building was seen as a part, as you would have seen on your site view today, has plant and equipment, it has building, it has bulk. In fact, there's even the framework that extends to the east that this area is going to fill. So it's not adding a new level to the building. It's adding to that level. And it's, as I said, it's the only available place to do it. But obviously there's an objective of putting a suite like this on a high level as well. We don't shy away from that.
Did you explore while the shadow impact to the public domain is minor, it is, you know, council has spent a lot of money on that public domain, and where you happen to be hitting shadow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is on a seating area in an area that is actually heavily used. So did you explore what it would take to actually eliminate that shadow impact?
The shadow impact, as you see, if you go to 3 p.m. and 4 p.m. shadows, the slither of shadow is going to cut that area at some point in time if anything is done beyond the existing building envelope. So it's a matter of at what time that happens and how quickly that moves to the extent that when if you look at a 4 p.m. shadow, the shadow is well out into the ocean. So it's not a matter of simply cutting it back by another metre or 2 metres and so on. Effectively, anything that comes beyond the existing alignment will cause an additional shadow on that area. In terms of, we accept what you say about the seating area and so on. Again, one thing we would say is that the shadow diagrams don't take into account the very significant vegetation along the promenade there, where you've got the Norfolk pines and various other vegetation, which in our view, in midwinter, would likely be overshadowing that area to an extent in any case.
But we usually don't. Of course we don't.
But from a merit point of view, when we're weighing these things up and against the context of a heritage office saying that they're comfortable with this, subject to it being reduced by the amount that they were very prescriptive in putting forward, we would say that the impact is minor, if not negligible, particularly when you view it against the backdrop of the zoning controls and the city centre objectives.
Just another one. I'm just trying to think if I read it. When you made reference to the Bourke Street properties having a 32-metre height limit,
yes.
Are they the sites that also only have a 1.5 to 1 floor space ratio?
That's right.
Yeah. So that there's the ability to perhaps reach those heights or will be limited by the floor space ratio available?
Yeah, what we would say is that a design approach on those sites, in my view, would likely have building forms on the eastern part of those sites to...
maximise views.
Well, there's that, yeah. And also to articulate that corner. It would be quite unusual, in my view, from an urban design point of view, that they would be set right back from the corner. So even if that resulted in, say, two tower form, for example, two slim towers, I think the break between those towers would be the view corridor towards the Novotel as opposed to a view corridor across the front or at the corner of Bourke Street.
All right.
Yeah.
I think any other questions? Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So moving on to item two, this is 35 Yallingong Street, West Wollongong. Now I'm just going to read out the names of people who I've got registered. I've got Anne Holyfield. Anne's here. Good. Mark Pearson.
Yep.
Good. Joe Curriccio. Gemma Curriccio. Am I saying that right?
Curcio.
Rightio. Sorry. And then... I've got Luke and Robert Gizzy for the applicant. Now, I'm just going to... Anne, do you want to come up?
Okay.
Okay.
So I guess on our street of Yallingong, I just wanted to first kind of...
Yeah. Do you want to just... I'm seeing from your... You're at number 33, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, 33.
So you're immediately next door.
Yes.
And I'll just get my orientation.
Yeah.
You're just essentially to the north, so...
So if you went there today, first of all, the important things to note, I guess, it's a very narrow street with many houses with either young families or families with teenagers, as well as older residents. And so I think one thing that I pointed out in my objection letter is that there's currently 16 single-dwelling houses on that narrow street area, and so this would be quite a significant increase, almost doubling the number of residents on our street. And so I think that's something that's fairly significant. The other thing is that with the amendment, we actually lost visitor spaces. So in that original proposal, I think there was 4 visitor parking spaces, but now, even though we've only lost the 1 unit, it's now down to 2 visitor parking spaces. So I thought that seems a little low. And then I also noted that whenever there is the rubbish removal, they'll need one of those visitor car spaces. As well as I don't think there's, when in those situations there's any parking for disabled drivers. So then also coupled with the fact that half of those new townhouses are tandem garages underneath. So, you know, I'm kind of guessing that realistically that back parking space won't get used as often as it might appear to get used. So I'm guessing that, you know, really there must be a lot more cars on our street. I just can't see how that can't happen. And then the other thing I wanted to point out is that it is noted in the proposal that there's two city buses, the 39 and the 11, coming up and down our street. But it's not noted all of the school buses that come up and down in the morning. And so I thought that's also pretty significant because we've got the 090 Edmund Rice bus, the 91, the 92, 93 going to Edmund Rice. We've got the 203 to St. Mary's, the one going to Holy Spirit, and the one going to St. Bridget's. And those are all coming up and down our street in the morning, which is really handy because we do actually have a lot of teenagers on the block. But it's not good if there's a lot more cars on that street, especially for any of the young families. And I think that might be the main things. The only other point I wanted to make is I did do a little bit of research on the council website, and I saw that previously there's actually been quite a bit of discussion about the corner of Paraka and Yelagong on the traffic committee. So all the way back, even sort of over the last 15 years, there's sort of been regular complaints made about that turn, and I think it's because there's all the buses coming in off of Paraka into a very narrow street of Yelagong. There's been various suggestions over the years to kind of make sure that those people can turn adequately coming into that street. So I just wanted to make sure that that's also looked into as much as possible. And that's it.
Okay, so your main concerns are about traffic,
yeah.
I take it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you've had a look at the plans and
yeah.
understand fences along boundaries and that type of thing
yeah.
that are being proposed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess one other point would be I know we have that big Camp for Laurel tree in the
yes.
back of our property.
Yeah.
And I know it's sitting right on the line.
It's on the boundary.
Yeah.
Or it seems
yeah.
to be when you go out
yeah.
there, it's kind of.
And I guess it does seem like from the plans they're keeping that
it is, yes.
tree
because yeah.
it's sort of mostly on our side, I guess. But obviously that would be a little bit impacted, I think, just in terms of how it's situated. But it looks like it definitely looks better on the amendment than it did in the original proposal.
Yeah.
And the designs of the units themselves look better as well.
So when you talk about original proposal,
yeah.
what one are you talking about? The approval on the site at the moment? An old one or...?
The one... So the DA 2018, that I'm talking about that proposal, and then there's the amendment that was just in June this year, 2019.
All right, okay, just it reads like it was amended.
So there
was
a...
There's a pre-DA for 11.
Yeah, and there's a reduction of one unit on
yeah,
the amendment,
okay.
but then we lost the two visitor parking spaces, so we went sort of from the four to the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Any questions, Anne?
No.
All good. Yep. As I said, we went out. We actually walked along the site
yeah.
and had a look at. We saw the camp for Lauren and
yeah.
looked at it from across the fence and had a look at your backyard
yeah.
as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
That sounds
Thank
good.
Thank you. Mark. So you're at 37?
Yeah, on the other side.
You're
yeah.
on the other side, yeah. So
yeah,
again,
pretty much covered the all the traffic and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just I've struggled trying, because I've moved in maybe 3 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and even before purchasing the house, I was trying to get a lot of info and amended plans and all that and through the council, and I was really struggling to even get anything. It was the hardest task. But just with the fence lines and... it says something in there about height of fences. It doesn't really state what the height is, because I've got a pool and I've got three young kids, two young girls, and it's going to be potentially just uphill, so they'll be looking straight into the pool area and my whole backyard. Young girls, it's not really, I don't feel real comfortable with, mm-hmm. you know, 10 or so places down the back all looking in. There's just the noise as well with all the cars driving up and down. I know it's stated in there, they've done the noise and this and that, but just the headlights driving up the hill. Like Ian said, there's a lot of school children walking up and down morning and afternoon, and even my house trying to reverse out or drive out, it's pretty sketchy to try and get in and out as it is now. If there were to say another 22 potential cars down there driving out, it's fairly dangerous, I think, for the young kids, and a lot of older people walk their dogs and stuff in the morning. There's a lot of walkers mm-hmm. there.
Yep.
But obviously you've been the site, so you've seen how narrow it is. There is a lot of horns and brakes squealing all the time there out the front because of they've got to pull in and buses and stuff. So it states in there something about the, like I was saying, the headlights. It says this option or that option for my house, but it wasn't really clear on the alternatives. So like blackened or shades for the house, or because if they turn out of there, it's going to just light up that side of the house where my daughters are sleeping, you know what I mean, at night. It's that's what I'm pretty much it's a bit the, I don't know, it's not really as much details as I would have liked to know on there. It's like saying, oh, we can do this or that, but it's not 100% clear on what it all is, you know what I mean? Like they're sort of telling me what is going to happen, not what I, you know what I mean, would be good for me. But the bin area, like she said, yeah, I think that's, I don't know, you've got normally with a lot of bins all together, they stink. That could be an issue for me. Obviously, being multiple dwellings, that tend to not look after, like wash your bins out as well as if it was one house. They're sort of community bins, they just throw them in anywhere, so it's sort of, that's probably another issue with, you know, and then vermin and flies and whatever else being right next to my property, I'm a bit wary of the smell.
Yeah.
I think Ian's covered the rest of the stuff, but yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
Did you get a chance to actually have a look at the plans when you did your investigation, or was it a bit hard to get?
I really did struggle to get them through council. I was getting pushed around everywhere, and I ended up getting some off the tenants, off the neighbour, or something through that way.
Yep.
But yeah, the council was just pretty much just pushing me around everywhere. I got nowhere in the end. And then just to know whether it was it was amended, and then it was this and that. It kept changing the statuses. They couldn't really tell me. Like, I was really just in, you know what I mean, in the dark at the whole time, really.
All right. Well, I'll just in terms of the fence,
it's
proposed to be a 2.1 metre high acoustic fence along your boundary. And just forward, and we'll get the applicant just to clarify, forward of your house, it'll be, looks like it might be 1.2. So 2.4.
So that's adequate. That's not to be able to.
Wouldn't be able to see above a 2.1 metre high fence.
Not if you're walking there.
Yeah, if I'm not walking.
In those, you know, like the double story, you'd be able to see straight in for sure.
Yeah, well, that's down. Then you've got to look at, and what we'll do is we'll have a look at the windows. The closest window would be about. Because your boundary finishes and backs onto council's reserve.
Yeah.
Most of the units are all down behind there.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're kind of near the reserve. They're not near your house.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
But
that.
They'd have to be looking up. So it'd be, you know, we'll have a look at those windows in that side boundary. The only way they'd look
quite a fair bit lower.
They're lower. They're also lower than your property as well. So the overlooking would be harder. It's not a huge overlooking issue from the lower units. because they're below your, they're lower than your ground levels. It's stepping down, and they're quite a way away from your backyard.
Oh, just the second level, but would be over the level of the backyard. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. That's why you'd look at. We'll look at the side boundary windows in those.
And then there was something in there, like I said about the car lights.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got your submission, so, yeah.
Okay.
We'll actually ask the applicant about what they've said about that.
All right, thank you.
Any, just stay put? Yep.
So, you mentioned swimming pool.
Yep.
Where is that in relation to the house? Is it close to the house?
Your
swimming pool.
You said you had a swimming pool.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the backyard, pretty much right in the middle of the backyard.
Right.
It, both ways.
Yep.
It's probably, I'd say... Yeah. 2 metres off the fence or something, maybe?
Yeah, we can see it.
It's not on the survey, but it is on the aerial photograph.
Yep.
And I think I'd just mention for your peace of mind that the communal bin area, the rubbish area, they're talking about 1,100-litre bin, is, you know, some 30-odd metres downhill from the back of your site.
Yep. No, you don't think so?
Oh, it's quite a way away from your
backyard. 30 metres, a bit of wind, you know.
Well, that's an issue. I suppose if the wind's blowing.
Yeah, oh, it's pretty quite windy in that gully there, normally, out the back there. It is. Might not be out the front of the house, but you go down the back there, it's always a little bit more windier for some reason.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention that just in case you haven't understood that from your investigation.
All right, thank you. That's good. As I said, we understand your issues and we'll have a look at it. Joe? You going to come together?
Yeah,
that's all right.
Get it all covered.
Now,
5 minutes.
Where are you guys?
We're at number, 11?
Where's that?
So, you know where the council strip is?
If you look at the aerial, it's the one with a really big tin roof.
Yeah, we're just behind it. The property at 35 Yellagong's here, and we're here. Yeah.
Hang on, so show me again. So just come close and speak into the mic, because we've got to get you on record.
So 35 Yellagong is like the top street up here.
Yes.
We are on Kurrabal Avenue, which is this street down here, and we're like kind of right where that reserve is.
Can I ask how many you are from the corner?
Three?
Yeah.
But we probably doesn't go.
It's kind of cut off.
It's cut off. What number?
Yeah, it
do
does
you go
cut
to?
Off. Isn't that interesting?
That's
that
us.
One.
Oh, you're there. All right.
So
okay.
Straight back onto that.
So you've got your backyard's there. You've got the council bit of
which
council reserve.
Five,
yeah.
Five
okay. We actually
we
walked.
Down.
Yeah,
we walked down there.
Yeah, gotcha.
So right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can begin.
Okay. All right, thank you for your time this evening. I come here this evening just so that you can see the face of the neighbours, the people who will be directly impacted by the proposal of the development of 35 Yellagong Street. My husband and I bought our home back in 98, just to give you some of the backstory. The main draw was the vista and the instant sense of peace that we felt walking into our backyard. We did our due diligence at the time because it was a huge expense back in 98 just to even buy a property. We looked at the potential development of that site itself specifically, and we rang council at the time and they assured us that there'd be little to no chance of the site being ever overdeveloped because of the strict planning controls that they have in place. So in 98 we made the biggest decision of our lives and we bought the house. We bought our home, not a house, it's our home. We're not opposed to a reasonable development of the site. However, I am opposed to the current plan submitted. And I think that was pretty obvious because I had a lot of points. and it was submitted. And the obvious impact it will have on our home. And I took exception to the fact that at no point in any time from the original plans, and there's been several, there was over the years, did the developers or the assessors consider our points and the impact on the existing residents adjacent to the area of the block site, not just on either side of number 35. For example, the noise report was reused. It wasn't redone, it was reused, and the original report that I read was on based on number 9, which is a few houses up from us, and not from our block. And that would have a lot of impact. Parking, I believe it wasn't adequately addressed. For 10 units, a minimum of 2 spaces, I think anybody that lives today wouldn't expect 2 families out of those 10 units to only have 2 visitors at any point in time. So the surrounding streets, we can't handle the overflow of any visitors, potential parties, dinner parties, whatever. We'd have to be living in a cave to think otherwise. And I think this is a gross underestimation of the architects of human interaction today. The first proposal for this site a few years back was for 8 units. The next one was for 15. Then it was 11. Now it's 10. So I believe the magic number would be about 5. That's what I'd be comfortable with neighbour-wise, because that obviously wind up being our neighbours. Not the developers, not the people selling them, but the future buyers of those houses would be ours, our neighbours. And based on the levels, they were saying 3 stories at the back of our house. We're high set, so you've seen that. So it's on a bit of a slope, and our main living area would stand just above 1 story, so it's almost a 2nd story. So 3 stories, I think, is a little bit high. The noise and light pollution, together with increased congestion, it would ruin the peaceful oasis we call our home. And I agree with Anne and Mark. 10 units, too many cars, too much noise. And I've got teenagers. Gemma's my oldest. And between 21st, 18th and 16th birthday parties, that's a lot of noise. And we cut it off at 11 o'clock for our neighbours because it's too noisy for them. We've got a lot of people there, a lot of young families, a lot of elderly, and we make sure that our parties are very controlled, just out of respect for their own, you know, peaceful oases that they live in. So I'm asking you as stewards of our community to consider the current homeowners and reconsider the current plan, which is really, I think, is pushing the envelope from low to medium density, and it's really creeping into the medium to high density range. The report suggests that West Wollongong may change in the future, but this side of the Princess Highway, it's in your hands. It doesn't have to be like the city. It can be a little bit of, you know, our little own country haven adjacent to the city. And it's our neighbourhood. And the final thing, once the buildings are up, they're not coming down. And as utilitarian as these buildings are, because they're not exactly attractive, they're not coming down. They won't come down in the future. Once they're up, they're up. And I don't see any of the developers saying, I'm sorry, it was a wrong decision. Yes, it's too noisy. We should have made another decision. I just can't see that happening, and nobody's going to compensate me. And we've just spent an awful lot of money in the last 2 years based on the fact that the last plan was rejected on just upgrading our house. And if I'd have known that this was going to go through, we would have sold up and left like another couple of owners on Yallagong Street to have done already. So they've left the area just because of this development. And we've just invested in it because we thought we were going to spend our retirement there, basically. Now I don't think that that might be the case, and my kids will cry if we have to move. And I can't afford to pay the state government any more taxes. So that's me. Jem?
Okay, so just so you know, that 8 unit development, that one was actually approved.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So but then they didn't go ahead. No, I do know, and I objected to that one as well, but it didn't get this far.
Yeah.
They just pulled out for whatever reason. I think the prices were a little bit rich for the community.
All right.
Back in the time.
So my issues are threefold, but one of the most, I guess the umbrella issue is that the reports that were provided were largely failed to address our property and our neighbours on Yallagong, on Currabell, sorry. As you noted before, the image cut off where our house is, but we're right back where that reserves is, so we're going to be adversely impacted the most, and I think that that was a major omittance within the reports. One of the reports also, I think it was the audio report by Mr. Stevens, My mum mentioned that it was the 2014 report was repeated in 2018. However, the 2019 report was only about motor vehicles. If we're looking at 10 units with 2 to 3 bedrooms each, we're looking at minimum 30 people. I just think it's a bit absurd to only consider motor vehicles when people are so capable of making a lot of noise. And especially in the dip that we're in, it's very, like, it's great for a singer. Like, the acoustics are awesome, it echoes. But, like, yeah, my parties have, like, we've had to turn them down because it just echoes so loud, not because the noise is that much. The second is it's a low density area, and this is an overdeveloped site. In the Wollongong City Council's website, they estimated that between 2016 and 2036, West Wollongong would only see 83 new residents in a 20-year span. I just think that 10 new units in an area which is very, as I think Anne said, single base, it just doesn't match where we are living in the locality. And lastly, we have addressed parking and vehicles at a significant length, I think, at this point. However, one thing that I think has been left out is that the road on Yelagong Street is pretty much one way either way. The cars that are driving there, even though it's considered low, I guess, density when it comes to how many cars are frequenting through, we always have to pull over to wait for someone else. There are a lot of children using those bus stops, and even exiting or entering that driveway would be high risk as opposed to even the cars coming through already. Lastly, I did find a case from 2018 called Blasian Wollongong City Council, and those developments were rejected even though it was only 4 townhouses on the block due to the width and the sizing restrictions not being complied with. Here we have the same thing where the width and the compliance have not been and the requirements have not been complied with. And I think the matters definitely align in that way, because if it was 8 units and it was accepted, now it's up to 10 and the requirements have not been met. I just feel like the requirements would be met and the issues that the council has identified in their own findings would cease to exist had the development been proposed as a reduced amount of units. So we're not... I think our main argument is it's not rejected in its entirety, but in its current form it is. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Now, questions?
No, I think it's very clear.
Yeah. Thank you. We actually walked down right behind. Yeah. Lovely, you know, you don't realise there's little pockets of very quiet areas. Yeah, yeah, it's lovely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So you've got your hand up. I'm assuming you haven't registered. No, that's what's your name?
Margaret Nova, I'm 60 Yelagong Street as
well. Okay, would you like to?
Yeah.
Okay. 60. Now, where's 60?
He's just the opposite of Mark.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yes.
Across the other side.
Across the other side.
So
yes.
Also, I'm a neighbour there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mother of 2 young kids.
Yep.
I would just like to add with my neighbours as well. It's a very dangerous street. So we have, so far I have experienced 2 bad situations with the bus as well, because it's very narrow. So my husband's got a Nissan Navara. So on the street there's a only space for my husband's truck and also 1 bus. We were just about to walk on a safety area. We were nearly smashed by the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason is, like I said, my daughter, my little 2 years old, just accidentally ran on the street. And it was, pretty dangerous. Like they said, when other car is coming past, doesn't matter if the top of the hill, 1 car has to stay and wait. And also the entrance is bad. And where, so 37, 35, 33, number 33 as well, it's the most narrow street.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to add that. It's very narrow street. It's very dangerous. And for that many cars, it's not suitable. And also I'm very concerned about the pollution as well when they start building the units. Because
okay.
Like I said, I got 2 little kids. And like my neighbor said, as a young couple, we renovated our place. We put our lives in that one. So, you know, like we got a mortgage as well. And we really would love to, we really like to enjoy that house where we live now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great, thanks. Understand that issue. Where's Lauren? Do you want to just... Can I just get you to spell your name?
Yes.
Where's Lauren, just the lady at the back. If you just let her know your name. Yeah,
yep.
That would be good so I can have it for the record. Thank you. Now, before I'm about to move on to the applicant and their representatives, is anybody else... I haven't got anybody else registered to speak, so one last call out for 35 Yalong. Yalongong? No. Okay. Luke and Robert, do you want to come up? Now, in your hands as to how you want to present.
Thank you for the opportunity. And, what we might do is we might just respond to some of the questions that the speakers had, so I'll probably just go one by one and see if I can respond to those questions. Luke, if you want to jump in. Speaker number one, as far as in relation to the traffic, the parking, we do have a required amount of parking. In addition to this revised proposal, actually has a holding bay for the for five of the residents which have stacked parking. The two visitor spaces which do comply, one of those visitor spaces is adaptable as well, so it's an adaptable car space. As far as the bin removal, the bins are down to the bottom of the site, well away from the adjacent boundary. There is a 2.1 metre acoustic fence which runs down that on the driveway side as well, just in relation to the gentleman's Anne's query in relation to the acoustic concerns, as well as part of this amended proposal, there's actually two positions at the front of the street where two cars can pass each other and hold towards the front of the site. In relation to speaker number two, once again, the acoustic fence has been provided. The windows predominantly on units 2B and 1A are actually high-level windows, so there's no issues about looking across. Also, type unit number three as well, the front unit, the single standalone front unit, those windows are high-level as well. The acoustic fence we've touched on, the high-level windows, the bin area we've touched on as well, which is down below. As far as smells, we can deal with the maintenance program. The body corporate can deal with any potential hosing or cleaning or maintenance of that area. In relation to the speaker number three, there is the position of the deep soil zone does assist to mitigate any potential impacts. The parking is compliant. The FSR is compliant.
Do you want to just, can you just speak?
Yeah, sorry.
Right,
sorry, just, yeah, excuse me.
The,
sorry.
Bring
yeah,
that right close. Yeah.
In relation to speaker number three, the position of the deep soil zone assists that person as well. The parking, I think I've touched on the parking as far as the compliance, the issues with noise and the acoustic fence aid that issue. The discussion in relation to the acoustics, we've touched on that as well as the three-storey element. The three-storey is defined to the internal of the site. And in relation to speaker number four, the pollution is obviously just during construction. I think that's with certain conditions imposed during construction, as well as the traffic. I think as far as traffic management, the addition of holding bay and the visitor parking spots. We do have our traffic engineer present if there's any particular questions, as well as our acoustic engineers present as well. I'm okay.
So I just might fill in the gaps with some of the things that the additional things that I picked up in the speaker's comments. The first speaker, Ms. Hollyfield, raised the narrow street and traffic generation as a result of the proposal. I guess the entry to the site has been designed so that two vehicles can come and go simultaneously without any conflict, and the entire driveway length allows for vehicles to pass at any one time. The proposal will generate probably one car every 8.5 minutes in terms of trip generation during a peak hourly event, as depicted in the traffic report. Approximately seven vehicles per hour is the estimated trip generation at its peak. We don't think that's an undue strain on the existing road network, particularly with those traffic management access ingress considerations we have in place, so to ensure that there is no undue hold up for vehicles coming into or out of the site itself. In terms of the suggestion that there was a conflict with the waste collection area and the visitor parking, we've provided turning templates in the traffic report that show that there is no conflict between visitor parking one and the waste vehicles. There is a shared space between those two areas, acting as a disabled space that allows people to park in visitor parking one and get out on their driver's side, and without conflict to any of their waste management arrangements that are in that place. In regards to, I think it was Mr. Pearson, I apologise if I got the last name wrong, for 37 Yellagong, yes, it'll be a 2.1 metre high acoustic fence, lapped and capped. The recommendations in the acoustic report that there are no gaps whatsoever for the entire length of that boundary. That will also assist with any headlight glare that may be relevant for vehicles coming and going during the evening periods, and in particular ingress and egress out of the garage for the front dwelling at that location also. In terms of waste bins, I think if there are any undue smells, the immediate residents within the facility themselves would have more issues with the smells than the owner of 37 Yellagong, and that should be a managed thing within the body corporate to assess. With regards to Ms. Curcio's comments, in terms of views and opportunities, I guess the layout is something that was informed by the amphitheatre of that site. We have a already defined riparian corridor to the northeast that provides a good natural buffer to those residents over the other side of the creek. The opportunity to increase the buffer between the other part of the site that had the most residents overlooking the property. Okay, so this boundary has four or five backyards that will look across the property from over the laneway. So the opportunity to provide deep soil at that location, plus the opportunity to retain vegetation along that edge, was seen as an enhancement opportunity to increase that natural buffer and that natural edge to there. The other sides of the property at this location already look over the reserve, so there is good distance attenuation between other residents around. So I guess that was an informing part of the original design. In terms of previous proposals and yields, we're not too familiar with that. We weren't involved in the previous proposals. The yield within this site is under the permitted FSR. We have more landscaping than the required landscaping. We have more deep soil than the required deep soil. So I think the yield within the site is justifiable in terms of its scale and its context. With regards to the three-storey height, those units have been designed so that predominantly it will only be viewed as three stories from within the site itself, rather than outside the site, just by its interface with the driveway and those ground level uninhabitable arrangements for those unit types that have been put in place that are essentially cut in to the slope to accommodate that. In terms of noise from parties, all I can say is that there are 10 dwellings there, and usually within a strata type arrangement, which this will be in the future. There are 9 other occupants that may have issues with parties in terms of management, and if there are any undue noise from entertaining or anything like that as well. So I think the body corporate and the internal residents would be quick to cut off anything that was undue in that regard. In terms of the acoustic considerations and the lack of inclusion of Ms. Curcio's comments for their particular property, they were only provided in relation to the traffic impact considerations. The biggest impact receivers are those either side of the driveway that come into the site, because all vehicles must go past those points, and hence the acoustic impacts and the treatment for the 2.1 metre fence either side is something that was recommended by the proposal, whereas that part of the site closest to Ms. Curcio, would have two dwellings primarily at that end, dead end, accessing, entering and exiting the site. In regards to the reference for overdevelopment and the Blasey Court case, I think the Blasey Court case is a little bit different in terms of context. That was a court case that incorporated a site width for the entire site that was less than the minimum site width. In this instance, we're dealing with the majority of the site is well beyond the minimum site width requirement, and that part of the site where we are short of that requirement being that the front portion of the site is only containing one dwelling. The Blasey Court case also had a lot of impacts associated with flooding and other environmental concerns that informed that court case as well. And in regards to Ms. DeMoga, again, the dangerous street considerations, we do have our traffic guy here present if any questions on generation need to be asked in terms of that local road network. I think that's it in terms of addressing the speakers. Overall, we're in favour of the council recommendation. We did have a query on condition 2 that is draft recommendation. The recommendation is for deferred commencement, subject to obtaining an easement for stormwater. And my viewing of satisfying those deferred commencement conditions would generally make condition 2 obsolete, and if it does need to be included, then it should be brought forward as part of the deferred commencement condition requirements. That's my reading of it, but we'll take your comments on that if that's necessary. So.
With that easement question first. Have you got to get an easement over?
Council land.
Have you talked to council about it?
It's part of the assessment process. I don't know if we've talked to the property division.
Yeah. Won't be the first council that says, not a chance in hell.
Yep.
Do you know what council's attitude is to easements over land?
We've been involved in many projects in Wollongong LGA with this condition and these deferred commencement arrangements, and it hasn't been a problem to date for those other projects. So.
Right. Ask the question, have you spoken to Council's property section about what's needed?
I personally have not spoken to Council's property section.
Okay. Do you know what physically is needed?
So the stormwater concept requires a headwall outlet to the creek and a stormwater line for outflow. So the requirement is for a 1 metre wide easement for the stormwater infrastructure and enough room for the headwall outlet. So,
which is part of the stormwater concept. You have to build some stuff on council's land.
Yep.
Our turn now. Rightio, we'll have a look at that. So you're saying, you've just said to us, anyhow, should it all be part of
Yeah, well, yeah.
If like if together as part of
if
the
we've, deferred If we've satisfied the deferred commencement and have the operational consent, then the condition two becomes obsolete,
yeah,
in my
so
opinion.
Yeah, so it'll be so. Just... yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the condition in the wrong spot by the sounds of it. Okay. Rightio. Questions? Go.
Thank you, Chair. The proposal is very reliant on tandem parking. Have you used that solution before? What do you think of the practicalities of that in a development like this?
What's important is that these revised plans have the holding bay, and previous proposals of this nature or another project we've done, the holding bay was not put in, and the whole discussion with our traffic engineer was to provide an opportunity for people to park their cars, get the car out and put it back in. So the holding bay is dedicated only to the five residents that actually have the stacked arrangement.
Do you think it increases the risk of people not using their on-site parking?
No, I don't think so. People have got a double garaging. Their cars are safe. They're contained in their own garaging. If I had a car, I would keep it there. Being it that it's a holding bay and people know what it's there for, I think we suggest that they're encouraged to use that. And that's the reason why it's there. It's not a visitor spot. It's a dedicated holding bay. Yeah. Okay, the two lists. With this proposal, we were trying to increase the amenity of this proposal, and that the community open space is technically not required, but we've actually put that in as to add quality to the development. We've given the opportunity for the people in the low part of the site to actually go into a small glass lift and go up to the platform, as well as the adaptable unit to have its own direct private access into accessing the community open space. So it's one's private and one is actually for the people in the low part of the site.
That lift takes one up to a level which is above the fence height of the neighbour to that 37 seems to me. Is that right?
The lift on the adaptable unit is enclosed in the adaptable courtyard space. If you go to drawing
at the south elevation
if you go to section
on
yeah.
the adaptable dwelling
What does it? Well, that's correct. Is it? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is correct. That's
so,
correct. Yeah.
Is it open or glazed? Or?
Well, that is at this stage known as a glazed lift. Yes.
That can be
solid for required. That's its sole purpose, yes.
So it's quite separate. You can get rid of it.
That's possible. That's correct. Yeah.
And if we're concerned about the privacy of the backyard of that neighbour, pools down in that vicinity, the library, the aerial, that might be something to consider.
Yes, yeah. For sure.
Or alternatively, is there another spot for it that doesn't...
Sorry?
Yep.
Yeah. Like it needs to be in that core. It's probably the best place for it, only because it's actually outside of the tree protection zone and the deep soil zone. So that's where it is. There. And it's well screened. It can be well screened, or it could be actually a solid structure with a standardised lift arrangement.
So it's a platform with a balustrade around it. Is that the right?
It's a
full lift.
Yeah. It needs to be because the platform won't get us that height.
Mm. Probably a little bit of a left field question, but Luke, I know you weren't involved, but Rob, you appear to have been involved in the original approval.
Yeah. Approximately 12 years ago.
For the eight unit. So. Yes. Just, I suppose there's two or three questions just from a siting viewpoint. Because we've had just had a look at those. So with these developments, when you're kind of fitting them into areas that essentially accommodating single dwellings, you're just looking for the most sensitive land use, most sensitive boundary. And you've got on three boundaries, you actually adjoin reserve for a lot of it. And I think the way you've dealt with the front block is very good, because you've just put essentially a dwelling there, which is essentially what the street's looking like. The most, probably from my point of view, I'm just thinking the most sensitive boundary is that 33, the rear boundary of 33 Yellongong. Mm-hmm. And what we've got there is the highest bit of the building with no breakup, but at essentially 6 metres or 6.3 metres. And just looking at the way the other development was proposed, you kind of did a terrace type development, which those units all had really good outlook to the reserve as well. These, the 5 of your units essentially look into the driveway space of this townhouse development now. So I'm just interested in probably the change in thinking, just what were the drivers that essentially changed or altered the way you approached the site. Yeah. Understand that, look, there's another 2 units in it. I suppose my comment is it seems to be we've compromised some amenity when compared to that previous scheme.
Probably to answer that question is just to recap, we were the original authors of the original proposal. This proposal or the modification prior to that, we were not the original authors. The original architects actually were in Queensland-based firm, and they no longer on the project. We know this client, so we've come in to help them out and take this project further to the point where it is now. So from an amenity point of view, I think it's important that, obviously, I agree with you in the front dwelling. The 5 internal dwellings, there's actually dual courtyard uses there. So what we're saying is that with our improvements, we've actually got basically courtyards. Basically, the primary courtyard can be internal. There are also a secondary courtyard, which has actually got a 2-metre landscape buffer in that courtyard. The bedrooms above that are actually, there's only one window to a bedroom above that, which has actually got privacy screens above, so which is further mitigating any potential view into number 33. There is a bathroom window which is obscure, so all the activity generally happens at the ground level, and which basically can happen on either balcony, either side. So we feel like that's certainly an improvement. I think the opportunity to actually have the accumulated open space, which is technically not required, was a benefit that we said, well, let's put something back into development, use those existing trees and give an opportunity for accumulated open space. It gives another level of amenity, another level of where people can do and sort of congregate, so to speak. But we feel that the rear units have a great outlook. The units, the 2 and the 5, you'll notice that in section, that when you're at the balcony, they do have an outlook generally over the ones on the low side. So I think that there's varying opportunities of quality in those 5 ones that you mentioned. Anything else add to that? No.
I was having a bit of difficulty understanding, again, because I'm focusing on the sensitive boundary. I note that I'd actually don't have a section through the rear of the property and across the number 33's boundary. I was trying to figure out what those boundary conditions were. Those rear courtyards, which will have the western courtyards, I was just trying to understand their relationship to ground level and the boundary condition.
Madam Chair, it's probably best described on drawing 42, which is section FF.
That's in your site, though.
But does actually take into does pull back
yeah,
into.
Yeah, I suppose I'm looking. I was looking. That's still on your site. So you've got, and that only takes me through unit 2, which is still on your site. So it's not getting me that built form courtyard land level relationship to the rear of number 33. I just.
Okay.
But, you know I've asked this of you on other applications, is what is happening at the boundaries. Yeah. So we're very clear that we're not actually having people popping up and looking over.
Yeah, what happens at the boundary? I think I don't have a section handy, but I'm just saying that...
Because I don't think there is one.
I suppose that's why we've actually increased the instead of having a 1.5 landscape strip, we're at 2.2120, and the opportunity of having two courtyards on that level gives the opportunity for people to not only congregate in one space, the opportunity to be in varying spaces.
I understand that, but your living area is essentially, your living area is orientated to that space, and I suppose my question is, am I hanging up in the air, or am I? I think you might be hanging at ground in a lot of space, but I'm not. I'm just not totally clear. Yeah. And it's very, that's the rear yard, and there's five units along that boundary. And I'm just hearing there. It's not. But that's through here. FF. I know. I've already been there.
Probably reference the north elevation as well, which picks up, shows you the depth of the shows you the actual floor level in relation to Yallagong. That'll
north elevation.
North elevation, drawing 50. Top left hand. Revision. What's particularly important is if you look at the level one, which is the living level, and its relationship to the ground at that particular interface.
Yeah, there's a jump. It's all...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll find that...
I haven't got that. Why haven't I got that? Yeah. What? Is it after 43?
It's after
07 in 900. All
right, OK. Yeah. I'm just referencing the relation to...
Sorry. Thank you. It's not in order. That's all right. That's why I'm having trouble.
I'll just reference that elevation just to give an understanding of potentially where that floor level is in that particular unit.
Yeah, well, that's at RL37, isn't it? No, ground's RL34. Is that right? No, wouldn't know.
RL37.
Yep.
So ground level's RL37 in that unit, and that's unit two. So which means your courtyard's going to be at RL37 as well, isn't it? Because I'm not...
Just below that, yeah. No, sorry. No, that RL...
That's, yeah, it actually, no, it's...
It's RL... Yeah, it's RL36.7. RL36.7 is the floor level of that unit.
North elevation seems to suggest that your courtyard level is at the top of fence level at the boundary with 33. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, that where that ground line. There that's natural line ground.
Yes, this depicts a very steep change in natural ground level equal to the height of the fence. Yeah, can you explain that, please?
You're looking
that's
at
a split, that's north elevation. That's a north split elevation. Yeah. What you find, that's a split elevation.
Sorry?
That's a split elevation. The elevation towards the front shows the elevation immediately to us, and then we're showing actually the building
from our side onwards.
From our side at the boundary.
Yeah, you're doing that.
Yeah, it's a split elevation.
It's like, so you're doing, so.
So that's the ground level in the reserve.
That's looking back from the reserve, So...
So I want to...
I don't think I've got a nice, clean, straightforward answer to my units 2 to 5 about that relationship. So will be something that we'll be exploring further.
Yep.
Just the other probably understanding, again, from the plans is the driveway it's coming down the site and just hanging around that bin area, but as you turn into the townhouses, it looks to be starting to get out of the ground. So we were doing some numbers on that, and it looks like it's about, I've got a 2-metre retaining wall
at the bottom end.
Is that right, or
Sorry, I'm just trying to get my drawing.
Sorry, we were just working off 08, and then again that south elevation. Am I getting out of the ground a bit?
Yeah, if you go to section BB picks up driveway clearly. Page 40. Gradient there, maybe. But that's the thing.
BB?
It's only probably 1 point.
Yeah, I still don't know. That's the section. Yeah. That's 2 minutes.
So you pick up.
Yeah. So again, those boundary relationships, and I'm probably not clear on. I've got a 1.5 metres of landscaping, but I'm kind of quite not sure what's happening there.
We've got the OSD. It's probably
1.5. Under the
we've got the OSD.
Slab.
It goes from about 1.5, then goes to 600 to the face of the existing building. Bear in mind that is at part of the site, irrespective that that's where the council reserve does connect as well.
Yeah, it does. So yeah. Usually those, you know, where you're connecting to reserves, and they're quite sensitive boundaries, so you usually don't want to be resulting in walls along them. So again, that's going to get. I'm going to be over the fence, aren't I? So there's a 2-metre high fence, and I'm going to be.
No, we've been required to have an open pool fence to our boundaries along.
Okay, so when I look at that, I'll see a pool fence at 1.8 with landscaping and then a wall. Other questions? Yep.
I've just got a question with regard to the open communal deck. It's sort of halfway up,
it's up out of the
level of the second story in the lower units. Are you going to be overlooking any neighbours if you're standing on that?
You are.
Grab our section, sorry.
An elevated deck, it says RL37.42 and RL37.20, and I had the survey.
Yeah, as far as the ratio between that and unit 2, there is actually privacy screening to that unit 2 courtyard.
Under the Camphor Laurel. You've got your communal open space, you've got these elevated decks. Am I out?
Yeah, we have got a. There is. Unit 2 is provided, but we've raised that deck to keep the tree, as far as keeping the tree, not interior of the tree root zone. But there may be. Another section to look at that interface there potentially. If we do keep it. Yeah. We can, as I said, the communal open space is not required.
Why do you think, why do you think you need to do decks around the tree anyhow? Because communal open space doesn't have to be decking area, it can just be part of an amenity.
Yeah. So we're happy to have it at natural ground. We've got an arborist here that can probably.
Well, just no deck at all. Why am I putting decks around the tree to start with? Just question.
We're happy to drop if that's a recommendation. We're happy to lower it down.
Well, at the moment, we're like.
It was there for, honestly, it was there for enrichment and public benefit. We're happy to have it as natural ground. I think that's not unreasonable. Yep.
But ask if you do it to need to say that.
Yeah. I just.
That sounds like a good idea to me.
And then the lift.
Well, the lift would go both. Yeah.
We'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
Keep it natural.
Right. I had another question again, built form. You've put the holding bay gives a break in the lower buildings, which is, if anybody could see them, would be of benefit. But I'm just wondering whether, again, I'm looking at my boundaries. Was there any thought to put the holding bay and a break in the five across the back of number 33? Do you know what I mean? Just yep. Again, in terms of where are the benefits of these things best recognised, it's usually on those sensitive boundaries. And look, I take you, you know, you've provided setbacks to, you know, the north, I'll get that right. And as I said, the way you've dealt with the front of the site works. I'm just wondering whether
there may be an opportunity if we can get rid of the decks, get rid of the lifts, get rid of the stairs. There may be an opportunity to reduce that mass in terms of breaking that mass by pushing it further to the south. We prefer not to probably encroach further into the deep soil area. There's yeah, a nice strip.
No, I think it's proposed, you did, proposed there, it's but important.
But there is opportunity potentially between the driveway and to make that ground up by shifting that elevation across. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just think these questions about courtyards and relationships to adjoining properties, that boundary condition, I just don't think that's totally resolved. And then you've managed to put a break in the building, but it's on the site that, you know, it's not getting, the residents aren't necessarily getting the benefit of it.
Yep. One question, if I may. When I drive down the driveway and I come into the central area, from a design point of view, to me that would feel pretty enclosed because I've got the three-storey to one side, two-storey to the other. Because of the tightness, you haven't really been able to get any landscape in that area, which is really the entry, the address to this development. And then the deep soil planting to the northwest, I now realise that's got a quite a large retaining wall there, doesn't it? Because that section we looked at would have to retain those existing trees, and that elevation we looked at, which was taken from the reserve, that's almost a story and a half higher than the basement car park, from the car parking. So when I'm driving into that common area, I've got a wall straight ahead, I've got three stories this side, two stories that side, and not a stick of greenery. I just wonder about that, whether that's a successful.
Yeah, we're saying we've got obviously greenery at the
But the RL of that is...
It is much higher.
It's much higher.
So you're going to have a barrier.
Yeah,
so greenery is going to be...
What RL is at is the driveway at that point? Do we know?
Well, the RL at the boundary is 48.
No.
If you go to section C, you see that.
Yeah. It's 34. I'm looking at contours and I'm reading 34.12, 35.81.
37 there.
37 as you go further up.
You find as you go further down.
Yeah.
Section C seen section DD is the ones that count.
What do you reckon?
3 metres and it tapers down to probably...
The 3 metres is at the back of unit two. So at the driveway, it's probably a 1.5 metre retaining wall.
Yep.
There's a 35.81 goes into the tangent point of that awning entry, and the driveway level at the garage is 34.13.
Okay, so about 1.5 at the end of the drive of retaining.
Yeah. Yep.
Which tapers...
Creek.
So that's going to, but 1.5, that'll finish up with a barrier at the end. It's too high for
physical
retaining.
Yeah.
There's a retaining wall, but then you'll have to have something on top of that, won't you? Yeah, to stop the car going over it.
No,
No, it's above.
Okay. Mind you,
you
do it the other
way. It's 1.5 total. I'm going to need it there, aren't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, you're
going to
need it there.
I'm going to need it somewhere. Do I need a fence on top of here? I need something there too, don't I? Yeah, this is not good.
Query in my mind about the need for a 6 metre wide driveway for the full length. Is that really necessary? I think it's important to have good width at the threshold and possibly a couple of passing bays or holding bays, but does it need to be 6 metres wide for the full length? And could some of the landscape strip be widened perhaps?
You mean the main driveway coming down?
In the middle section there, you know, from about the rear, let's say, of dwelling at 37 to its rear boundary.
Yeah, I might refer to a traffic engineer to answer that question.
Okay.
A traffic engineer can answer that question. Yeah.
And just before the garbage is going up to the street.
No, it's private garbage.
So you're getting a private contractor to come down onto the site and collecting from.
That's right.
That'll be your answer. Just while I've got garbage in my head, yeah, total garbage. So. Once this is strated and sold off and everybody decides that they're still paying garbage rates, does this still meet council requirements for garbage collection as well? Anyone know? Yeah, I don't imagine a traffic guy might be able to tell me whether I can get a garbage truck down here.
Well, it's been designed.
Yeah. So you had two questions.
In terms of the
turning
around of a garbage truck, a full-size council truck, it would be difficult. We'd have to look into the exact specifications of the truck. But as it is currently a 6-metre-wide driveway, it would likely not be an issue for council to service the site in their typical waste collection times, which are out of peak, such that they could probably reverse back up the driveway if they needed to, which is not unusual for a garbage truck.
The garbage truck we've selected is actually JJ Richards, private contractor.
Just talk into the mic so it gets on record.
It's by JJ Richards, private contractor. That garbage truck is equivalent to council's. Council have got those size garbage trucks as well.
It's just a question.
We've got the data on those. We've got the data on those garbage trucks, and we know that garbage truck is equivalent to the garbage trucks that council have got. The
council
large
got
ones,
them, or
and
the
they have got,
has
and
got
they
them.
Have got the ones we selected. Yep, to answer that question, and
okay,
it can manoeuvre and reverse out on site and drive out in a forward direction.
Drive in and out in a forward direction, because we usually don't do brand new development reversing garbage trucks.
Yeah, that was part of this revised additional documentation.
Yeah. Okay. So the other question, and we'll take it up with council as well. But the other question is, do we need 6 metres of driveway all the way down the side of the boundary, or could we get away with part six and some holding or passing bays and to actually get improved landscape?
Certainly, the traffic generation is low enough and the site distances are clear along the driveway, so there's no requirement for this site to have a full 6 metres width. It would certainly be fine to have an arrangement with passing bays. Maybe based on the length of the driveway, you'd probably fit two passing bays along there, and that would be certainly an acceptable solution for the site.
So what would be the width of driveway required in the non-passing bay area?
3.6 metres would be sufficient. 3.6. Do you have any other questions for traffic that you'd like me to address on here?
Probably. You heard a number of the submitters raise some issues with the width of the street and cars having to pass each other and difficulty in just general traffic in the area. Did you kind of, you would have observed that when you went out, and from a traffic perspective, have you got any comments on that?
Yeah, I do have some comments. In general, I would say the street is narrow. I sympathise with the residents as far as the width of the street and the difficulty of cars passing when there are cars on both sides of the street. Now, my interpretation of why the street is that narrow is based on the wider context of the site and the road network. If you look at the major roads in the area, if that road was wider, it's likely that that route would be used as a rat run between Mount Kira Road and the Princess Highway. By having the street narrower, it means that people will naturally be less inclined to use the street, such that there's less vehicle traffic on the road in general than it would be if the road was wider. Of course, that has implications as far as parking, but it's a trade-off that was likely selected by council when the roads were built. In terms of the impact of the site on parking, we meet the DCP, but I know there's been a question about the tandem parking layout and the possibility or that people will use the second space for storage or not for their vehicle. I'd just like to note that if they were to park on the street, they'd be required to then walk up and down quite a long driveway and then to wherever they've parked their car. I think it's quite inconvenient, and certainly in most cases, the location of parking is dictated by convenience, not anything else. So I wouldn't anticipate that would be a problem. Does that address your concerns?
Yeah, I think it raises your... it addresses some of the points that have been raised.
Sure.
Any other questions? Other questions?
How long should the passing bays be? 2 bays you would recommend?
They typically need to be 7 metres in length, but it would be based on detailed sweat path testing.
Yeah.
Just the reason that I'm back down around that Turning Bay bin collection area OSD tank space is the reason that's up out of the ground is to get is that's where you put the bin storage, and is the OSD sticking it up, making it.
There was particular grades on that track coming through invisibility. So I know what you're suggesting. Can we get a bit further on that?
Well, I'm just thinking if. Thinking out loud, if I've taken decks out, if you're looking at taking decks out, I'm taking lifts out. Do I juggle around where the visitor car parking spaces go, and is there other space? Just again, because I don't think that built that relationship to the reserves great when you finish up with 2 metre walls. That's all.
There might be some opportunity.
There is probably some reason for that being benched due to the truck. As you make that manoeuvre, you're probably going from a cross grade in one direction to one in the other direction, and having it flat or nearly flat will mean that the truck can make that turn without scraping or otherwise being compromised.
So where's the truck? Is the truck doing 3-point turn or something, is it?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. That's what's doing it. Yeah. All right. Okay. Other questions? Nothing. Either Robert or Luke, did you want to have some closing remarks? No. All good. Rodia, thank you. Thank you for your assistance. We'll move on to item 3. Okay, we're moving on to 18 Hopetoun Street, Winoona. Now I've got Tamara Moore, and you're speaking on behalf of the residents, and you've, Tamara and Craig, you're next door neighbours to the property? Yeah, yeah. So, and you've both registered to speak as... Right, yes. Yep, I understand that. And then, Craig, you're going to be speaking as well. Okay, Tamara, come on up. Yeah, I'll ask her in a minute. So just remind us which property you're in. You're in the house?
Number 20.
Number 20. Which is the residence right next door?
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I start?
Yep, go.
Good evening. I thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking on behalf of 106 residents of Hopetoun Street who are calling on rejecting the proposed development. Hopetoun Street is overdeveloped and overpopulated. It is an R2 low-density area, but somehow it is dominated by multi-dwelling developments of double and three-storey buildings. Survey and other documents provided identify the block of units to the west of the proposed development incorrectly. It is a three-storey building, not two. In the statement of environmental effects, as well as the survey, there is no mentioning of the double-storey block of units immediately adjacent to the east of the proposed development. Developer is providing misleading information about the street potential and its infrastructure. Traffic on the street is very intense at the moment. Approving a non-compliant multi-dwelling development will increase traffic, pollution and parking demands. Having three major businesses, medical centre, mechanics shop and Fernwood Fitness, which by the way provide no parking at all, results in customers parking cars along our street, leaving no spots for local residents and their visitors. We also observe cars parked illegally on nature strips. Walking along the street has become quite dangerous. There are concerns for safety of elderly people and children. Too many vehicles turning in and out of driveways of countless multi-development sites. Drivers' views are obstructed by the parked vehicle along both sides of the street, and a number of accidents have occurred because of that. Due to the non-compliance of the block's width, the proposed development does not provide adequate parking conditions. This will result in future residents parking their cars on the street, congesting it further. Providing just one visitor's car spot is simply not enough for non-compliant development on an overdeveloped street. Perhaps inspecting our street at around 7 p.m. when the majority of residents are back from work will give you a better feel of the current situation. There is a huge amount of bins to be emptied every week. In addition to that, residents of Pittman Lane put their bins out on our street despite having their own collection point. Being congested with parked cars, the street cannot accommodate for an additional 8 rubbish bins. Dear members of the panel and assessment officers, we invite you to visit our street in the early hours of Thursday morning to experience bin collection for yourselves. You will also have an opportunity to speak to the residents, as a good number of them are out on the street helping the driver move the bins from behind parked cars. Otherwise, bins won't be emptied, which happens regularly. It is reasonable to suspect that the existing dwelling at 18 Hopetoun Street and garage at 93 Farrell Road contain asbestos, taking into consideration that they were built before 1980. According to the WCC Asbestos Policy, Clause 961, the issue should have been raised and discussed at the pre-DA meeting. Such discussion has not been documented in the pre-lodgement notes dated 16th of April 2018. We believe the assessment has to be conducted prior to demolition, and if asbestos is detected and the type is identified, then according to WDCP Chapter E21, Demolition and Hazardous Building Materials Management, its removal should be included in the site demolition and waste management plan for properties to be demolished both on 18 Hopetoun Street and 93 Farrell Road. We, the residents of Hopetoun Street, respectfully request that you consider our position against this non-compliant multi-dwelling development proposal. We want you to get the real picture of the street situation. Don't rely on the misleading information. The proposal will not benefit current residents nor the future ones. Regulations and guidelines provided by Wollongong City Council are there to be respected and followed to ensure that residents' ratepayers are comfortable and safe in their neighbourhood. Thank you. I'm enclosing petition signed by 106 residents and some photos showing congestions on the road and the bin situation.
Okay. Is that petition been given to council before?
No, that's a
brand
new one.
They haven't had the opportunity to consider it?
No.
Okay.
This has been done after we've been notified again in September, which, may I comment on the letter of notification, the instructions given by the council how to get to the application and object are wrong, and the link that they give on the letter is wrong as well. So people had no opportunity to actually go online and find it by themselves.
Okay. Did you raise that with council though?
Yes, I
before
did.
Today?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Okay. But we've got limited ability to take into consideration anything new, but I suspect, so this is the third time this application's been up before the panel.
Yeah, that is correct.
And I think what you've said tonight, we've heard those issues before as well, because we were here in July,
yes.
And I know you did present to us.
Yes.
I think you can give that to council, and they can just put it on their file too, so they understand what's the number of people who have signed it.
Okay. Thank you.
It really needs, if this ever happens again, it really needs to go to council before it comes up to the panel, because the panel's basically, we need to deal with the information that we have in front of us.
All right. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
So you've made a submission.
Yes,
yeah.
I have.
Okay.
We have a few issues with the proposed development. We will lose privacy. There are 7 proposed windows, not including garages, on the western side. 3 of them are toilet windows and none of them are frosted nor fixed. Most likely, they will be opened to provide fresh air. There will be no exhaust fans and therefore the possibility of looking out will increase. No one takes into consideration that our deck is elevated. We will be able to look into their windows too. Proposed fence will destroy our lavender garden in the front yard, and as it will go straight through it and will cut off the only access to the street for our rubbish bins. Due to having a driveway on the other side, we are unable to provide an alternative spot for bins. Our lemon tree in the backyard will also be destroyed by the fence, as well as trenching for the stormwater system and planting of vegetation in the trees TPZ and SRZ. Our property is over 100 years old and there is a great possibility of damaging its structure by removing the existing driveway, which stretches along the entire length of our house and in the close proximity to it. Leaving the driveway where it is will avoid that problem and we'll be able to keep our front garden. How can council be satisfied with an arborist report? It's a complete mess. Has anyone read it? With recommendation of approval, council is ordering for the wrong trees to be removed. Tree number 3 is still not identified. Landscape plan suggests to retain it. Site demolition plan to remove. Which one is it? And why does it need to be removed? It has no impact on the proposal. Report says that the viburnum, tree C to the southeast of the property, has been removed prior to assessment. No, it hasn't. It's alive and well, stands at about 6 metres tall. It provides an enormous amount of nectar for bees in the winter months, as well as shelter for different species of birds and possums. Both landscape and demolition plan state the tree is to be removed. A tree at 97 Farrell Road has nothing to do with the development, yet it is mentioned in the arborist report. Tree number 7, however, at number 16 Houghton Street, will be destroyed by the major encroachment into its TPZ and SRZ by the stormwater system trench. What about multiple trees at 91 Farrell Road? The proposed trenching through the trees' SRZs will destroy them all. Why didn't the developer provide drainage plan to the arborist? See clause 7.1 on page 9 and 7.2, page 10 of the arborist report, when they were well aware that it is a part of the process. Why did the council overlook that? Two trees have been recently removed from 93 Farrell Road. They were in the way of the proposal. Tree number 6 has been mentioned in the arborist report and was meant to be retained. Was there a permit issued by the council to remove perfectly healthy native trees? If so, what was the reason for cutting them down? According to WDCP Part E Chapter E11, Heritage Conservation, Clause 10.1.3, a heritage impact statement should have been prepared. Properties on 91 and 93 Farrell Road are both heritage listed, and we believe the proposed trenching will have an impact on the structural integrity of property at number one at 91 Farrell Road, as the existing driveway to be removed is in the immediate proximity to the footings of the house. Demolition of the garage at 93 Farrell Road is not included in demolition plan, nor do we know its heritage significance. Proposed street tree planting seems to be impossible due to an electricity pole and fire hydrant being located in the nature strip. They are not marked on any of the plans. According to Chapter E6, Clause 6.1.11, trees should be planted well clear of underground services or overhead wires. Sydney Water also advised us that planting of trees is not permitted within 6 metres of any water pipe. We also obtained a list of trees on their website advising of the most invasive plants likely to cause damage to water pipes, and two of the proposed species are on the list. Clothesline and bin area of Unit 1 are not effectively integrated in accordance to Chapter B1, Clause 4.12.1a. Not only bins and clothesline are next to each other in front of a kitchen window and clashing with the garden bed, clothesline is located about a metre off the ground and does not have a high degree of solar access. See Clause 4.12.2.3. You see, our property cast a shadow too. Had the developer provided a shadow diagram with the consideration, with that consideration, as was requested by the council in the pre-lodgement notes, we would have seen that POS of Unit 1 is almost completely shaded between 9 and 3, which does not meet solar access requirements according to Chapter B1 Clause 5.12.2.5, which states at least 50% of the POS area for each of the subject dwellings in the development must receive at least 3 hours.
Wrap up.
Yeah, I'm wrapping
this
up.
This is we've got your detailed submission. You do understand
it
that.
It really surprises us that council closed their eyes on multiple mistakes throughout the proposed plans. No skylight on roof plan of units 3-4, no specification and measurements of skylights in the window schedule, wrong info on both original survey and tree survey, wrong info on the statement of environmental effects, wrong measurements for window 2 of unit 1, wrong figures on strata subdivision plan, wrong area of garages of unit 1, 2, slab area on the plan and garden and grass area does not match basic certificate, wrong site calculations on site analysis plan, wrong calculation of GFA and FSR, position of bedroom 3 windows on the upper floor plan of unit 1, 2 does not match their position on the eastern elevation plan, wrong identification of existing turf on the landscape plan, in fact it is existing concrete crossover, drainage plan is dodgy too. This non-compliant development will not be beneficial for anyone except the developer. It should be rejected. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's very thorough.
We've got quite a few questions to ask.
Will we have
an opportunity after?
No. This is, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, this isn't a debate. It's not about questions. You've raised some very specific issues, and we understand those issues.
Well,
and it is our job, and we to understand the plans and the report that council's written, and for us to make a decision. So,
I've got a question to the panel. May I ask a question?
You can
to
ask
the
a question.
Panel?
Question of us.
There have been quite numerous modifications to this DA, but the council has never issued a letter to the DA number at the end, indicating that there have been changes. Dates on all the plans are different. Drainage plan dated 2017. Arborist report date on the title page does not match other pages. Revision numbers on some plans do not correspond with letter on others. Some plans for 5 units were still displayed for public viewing this time around. and the DA number of 5 units is identical to this one.
So this is still the same. Just hang on. So first of all, this is the same application. So council doesn't change the DA number because it gets amended. So this did start off as an application for 5 units, and that was considered 2 meetings ago. Got amended to 4 units, which is when last time I saw you, we were down to consider that, and it's still at 4 units. So the point you're raising, there may be some internal inconsistencies, and they're very relevant points, and we're a little bit live to that anyhow because we've kind of identified some ourselves. So you're raising an issue about documentation consistency.
Yeah, my question is, if the panel approves this development, how can we be sure that 5 units are not going to go ahead?
Because the application actually has been formally amended to actually 4 units, and if the panel or were of their mind, we would have to make sure that we were referencing correct documentation. And you've raised some very legitimate points. As I said, we're a little bit live to some of those points.
Okay.
Now, don't go. Don't go.
Yeah, sure.
Does anybody have a question or anything of tomorrow? Yeah, that's quite clear. Mr. Lehman was just reminding me that any consent, just in a general sense, the first condition actually always specifies the relevant plans that are approved. Issue numbers, dates, and it wouldn't refer to a set of 5 unit plans because they've been superseded by at least two sets that we know of.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Craig. Go.
Good evening. I'm speaking to you again about our continued objections to the proposed development of 18 Hopen Street, Winuna. This is the third time that we've been here, and I'm hoping it'll be the last time. I hope that you'll finally reject this proposal rather than deferring it again due to it being non-compliant on several points and the developer ignoring your recommendations. The main point is 53% of the block is too narrow, therefore the proposal is non-compliant. This should be the end of discussion. We follow the council rules and regulations. We did with our recent DA. So why do developers get preferential treatment? Council rules and regulations are there for a reason, to protect current residents and to preserve the integrity of the street or town. Don't current residents have any rights? The visual mass of units 1 and 2 is excessive. 30 metre long by 7 metre high wall of units running along the entire length of our property and only 2 metres from our boundary will smother our property. It'll block out the morning sun into our bedroom, kitchen and living areas and stop the northeast winds which cool our home. At the last WLPP meeting, the panel wanted the number of bedrooms reduced and a break up of the visual mass of units 1 and 2. The developer kept the number of bedrooms the same and proposes a 90 centimetre gap between the upstairs portions of units 1 and 2. This gap is an insult to your recommendations, to us and to the remaining residents of Hopeton Street. This is the gap. It's the width of a door. It's 3% of the total length of the block. All this will do is create a wind tunnel and increase noise pollution for present and potential future residents. Why can't they make the gap bigger? The answer is because they have no room due to the proposal being too big on a block that isn't designed for the development. The proposed gap doesn't break up the visual mass at all. The jacaranda tree, specifically required by WLPP to remain as is, was misidentified by the arborist again. It is tree B and not tree 3 of plan 1 on page 6 of the report. The developer failed to provide the concept drainage plan to the arborist, page 9, clause 7.1 of the report, and therefore the calculations of the TPZ encroachment are incorrect. If the concept drainage plan was provided, the true encroachment would have been calculated. Trenching alone would create a major encroachment of the jacaranda tree of at least 13%, above the allowed 10%. On the landscape plan, the encroachment area of the jacaranda's tree's TPZ caused by unit 3 is indicated at 9.1%. However, they have forgotten another part of the unit, namely the upstairs bedroom and the private open space, POS. Adding these parts to unit 3 gives a TPZ of 10.5% bedroom only or 16% bedroom and POS. Both figures are above the 10% allowed by council. The tree's SRZ will also be disturbed by laying of turf and installing a 100mm high steel hedge as indicated on the landscape plan. Considering the height of the major branch of the jacaranda tree stretching to the east, this branch will be physically resting on Unit 3. This is absurd. The manoeuvring area is immediately adjacent to the living area of Unit 2. This is not permitted according to WDCP 2009 Chapter B1 Section 5.8.2.5H. WLPP stated at the last meeting that the separation between the living area and manoeuvring area be increased. This has also been ignored by the developer. Again, why? Because they've got no room due to the proposal being too big for the block. The manoeuvring area is too tight and will prevent cars entering and leaving in a forward direction. If a visitor arrives and discovers the space taken, they'll have to reverse out. There's no room to turn around. If the visitor space is taken and the car is marginally off centre, due allowing passenger door to open, cars from Unit 4 will be unable to leave their garage. The manoeuvring plan shows how tight it'll be for small sedans. Love to see how they manoeuvre a 4x4 with a bigger turning circle. Stated before, these cars will end up on the street, making it even more dangerous. We've approached real estate agents and been advised that the value of our property will decrease if the proposal goes ahead. The real estate agent that sold our property to us couldn't believe that they are considering a multi-dwelling development on such a narrow block. He's got people on his client list begging for a house with a big backyard. It's a shame that the existing property was never advertised. In conclusion, this proposal shouldn't be approved. It's non-compliant in several areas. The developer ignores specific requests by this panel. I believe they ignore your request because they are trying to fit too much onto a block that's too narrow. My family doesn't want the development. Petition submitted today shows that the residents of Hopeton Street don't want it. Only the developer does, and it's only for the money. It doesn't give a you-know-what about my family or the existing residents of Hopeton Street. This proposal is causing my family great stress and sleepless nights. This DA has been deferred several times. Each time we find more errors. It's mind-boggling that Council keeps recommending approval when there are so many errors and areas of non-compliance. Wollongong Local Planning Panel, please think of the present residents of Hopeton Street who follow Council rules and regulations and finally reject the proposal, not defer it again. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No, I think we're clear on your positions.
Thank you.
Okay. Luke, I've got your we've got your written submission, so yeah.
Thanks, Madam Chair and the panel for allowing us to respond tonight and be here to answer any questions in regards to this item. In relation to the specific comments that were raised, these have been raised previously by the speakers here tonight. In regards to the generalised concerns of the community that Ms Moore identified in her initial speech. Regarding the parking demands, we have the appropriate amount of car parking spaces required under Council's DCP. We provide the appropriate amount of visitor parking requirements for this scale of development in accordance with that DCP. Council's traffic engineer has reviewed the application multiple times in relation to parking and manoeuvrability for the site and has identified that it's acceptable from their standards. Bin collection, there is ample street frontage available for bin collection in accordance with Council's DCP requirements. There was a question of asbestos and if ever present, there are appropriate conditions of consent within the recommended conditions to deal with any asbestos management for the demolition of existing structures, being condition 28, 40 and 41. And in relation to the notification issues, that is a matter for Council to discuss. We're not aware of any other issues there. In regards to the personal issues for Ms Moore and primarily the overlooking to her boundary, we've been pretty sensitive in the way that the units have been designed along that edge in terms of the high-level windows and everything's been proposed there. We believe that the nature of those windows and overlooking will be irregular, and if there is concerns further, we would offer privacy screening if that actually is required, but they're most of them are high level along that edge for that purpose. The driveway damage during construction and demolition that it may have on their heritage item, the DA conditions recommended a dilapidation survey need to be done as part of the construction process. So that would identify any concerns that may be relevant for both the demolition and the construction process. In regards to the arborist report, in light of the panel's previous concerns regarding the anomaly in the arborist report and what may be relevant in that northwest corner, we had the jacaranda tree resurveyed. We provided that to the arborist. The arborist provided us with recommended TPZs and structural root zones in terms of its capabilities. The Unit 3 has been stepped back. The POS in that has been shifted. The drainage cuts under the corner of that dwelling as well in that section of the site. Council's landscape officer has reviewed the arborist report and is satisfied with the nature of that report, and there are multiple conditions within the recommended conditions that dictate tree protection measures that must be put in place moving forward during construction. In regards to the POS area for solar access of Unit 1, we've identified that is short in terms of meeting the 3 hours by itself. The proposal still meets the requirements of council that 75% of the units within the development achieve, or 70% of the units within the development achieve the minimum solar access criteria, which this development does. In regards to Mr. Moore's comments, the unit 1 and 2 has been broken up in terms of mass by that separation between the upper level. We believe we've managed to achieve that objective without reducing the amount of bedrooms, and that was supplemented by our submission and advice from our local real estate agent that we believe that was commensurate to what's being proposed in that. The scale of the development, the nature of who will occupy these in terms of a target and envisaged market, and the number of bedrooms for compared to the living space. In regards to the jacaranda tree, again, the arborist has reviewed that, I don't believe for a second that we have ignored the panel's previous recommendations. The only one we have questioned is that bedroom synergy with living spaces, and we've completely complied with every other recommendations that's come out of both panel meetings in terms of intent and trying to work with the panel and council. So I don't believe that we have disregarded those comments at all. The panel's got any questions, we're happy to answer.
Okay. You heard from the joining owners some inconsistencies in plans and documents. There's some of those we've observed ourselves. For example, the landscape plan has the old elevation on it. And we had asked for some proper sections through the buildings relative to boundaries be provided, and they don't look like they've provided. You look like you've provided a driveway section. And we've also kind of observed some inconsistencies as well. Have you done an exercise of going through and matching elevations with plans and that type of thing, just to kind of peer review the documents?
there's been multiple iterations of the proposal over time, and I think what you have before you is the current set from what I believe. I just picked that up myself. I didn't pick up that the elevation on the front of the landscape had that. So no is an answer to your question. Have I done an in-depth peer review of that? So okay. No.
We're probably going to start asking questions, so I'm just going to start with what you were here last time. We were having difficulty in the way these plans are presented. Again, expecting to be able to pick up a set of architecturals, look at the site and understand the relationship of those of that set of plans with the boundaries and the site. So I'm looking at... what is it, the site analysis plan. And I'm looking at Unit 2 and I'm trying to understand, you've probably heard comments of our previous application, that kind of understand the relationship of the principal private open space to Unit 2. I note that the lower floor level is at RL 32.414. Is that right?
Yep.
I go to the Unit 2 plan. I can find you. Is it Unit 2? And it's drawing. What number is it?
Seven.
So I'm looking at Unit 2. I have no idea what the relationship of that courtyard is to Unit 2. So at the moment, I might just assume that it is at RL 32.484. I go back to that site analysis plan, and I can see an RL 31 throwing aligning at the edge of that. So that tells me that that courtyard is 1.4 metres above ground level at the edge, which is going to take me pretty well. If I stand on that and I put a table and chair on that, that's going to be take me up and over the top of a fence. Is that right?
Just one second here. So it's saying this relationship. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So you're probably going to get the gist of we were a bit cranky last time about the way the plans, and I've, you know, from the last application we just talked about, the critical thing for us is to understand site boundary relationships, courtyard spaces and where they are, how they relate to the building and how they relate to the boundary is something that we're always going to be looking at. Yep. So... we can keep going like this, but that's first issue problem. If we go to units 3 and 4, I might let Steve go to units 3 and 4 and the courtyard issue and inconsistency.
In relation to units 3 and 4, if one looks at the north, western elevations on sheet 16 and then refers to sheet 3. I see a disconnect in terms of the relationship of the patios to dwellings. So I just, perhaps you can tell me how I might be able to reconcile the north elevation with the depiction of the units and the patios on sheet 3.
So this is this.
Yeah. Yeah, that should have been cut short. And we're going to take it for the... see how it comes across there? Mm-hmm. We need to cut it short for the tree.
Yeah, okay. So that's a deck off the
edge. It's a deck off the edge.
Off the edge, yeah.
Yeah, it was shown as a straight line rather than...
Yep.
So what are we looking at on the northern elevation? At the, you know, the ground level, just above the ground level?
Simply the facade, yeah. Simply the facade at that edge.
So
what's the heavy line about, four or five brick courses above?
Yeah, it's that heavy line there is the top of the deck.
Mm.
The top of the deck. Which should have been cut off.
Should have been cut off, yeah.
And so the west elevation, the north elevation's wrong? The western elevation's incorrect. It should show that there's a break. It
should show a little break
between the patio and the corner of the building.
That line.
And likewise,
Yep.
So those sort of things trouble us, I think.
You also said it was a deck. It's not shown as a deck anyway.
It looks like it's slab. It
wasn't meant to be originally in the last iteration, but that under the tree.
Just speak into that.
Yeah, under the tree, it needs to be changed to a deck to support the recommendations of the arborist.
But it hasn't been.
Yeah.
And this is, again, you left us in July. One of the critical things that we identified was amending the plan to deal with the jacaranda. So I've still got these inconsistencies. So Steve didn't even finish because the western elevation shows kind of a solid wall coming underneath
the. I take that to be the blade wall.
That's the blade wall.
The patio, yeah.
Yep. But the patio on the site analysis plan, which I do have great difficulty scaling off, looks like it extends past the bedroom about the same.
About 2 metres.
About another 2 metres. But then I go to the western elevation, and I might be sounding particularly pedantic, but the only place I know what is happening or where these decks or patios or whatever they are, I can only find that off here, and the proportions on this site plan don't match the proportions on the western elevation. And again, that was the critical issue for, one, the jacaranda, and again, I know you appreciate critical issue for a panel and assessment generally to understand activity areas and relationships to boundaries. And the other issue there, which I'll probably, I don't think I can tell. Yes, no, you might be all right on that one. Our lower floor level at 2948, and there's an RL of 29 going through there. So you look like you might be nearly half a metre above ground. You might be stepping, well, you don't look like you're not stepping down, it's going flush. So there's those issues through it. The other issue is, I'm just going to say, looking at units 3 and 4, again from a design point of view, you've got no openings on the northern elevation at the upper level. But just find that point. So just again from a privacy and overlooking and mitigating issues, if I look at bedroom 3, I'm on plan 14. Now, apart from the fact that I've got to go back to my site plan to understand the relationship, and I'm actually not quite sure because I don't think I've got a dimension of how far back that upper level is from the boundary. Either way, I'm going to think it might be about 4 metres. I've put a window on that elevation that goes into backyards, whereas I've got a northern elevation that's at least 9 metres back. So again, just in terms of designing for my conditions, it might have been better to look at windows on a boundary, windows on an elevation that's set back much further from a boundary. Yeah. It's those types of things that we're struggling with.
Yeah. So on that part of the side, on the western side, you're purely looking into a car park, okay, of the adjoining 3-level unit development. On the northern, on the eastern side, you're purely looking into a driveway where all those units are accessed from. With our first panel meeting that we had, there was a speaker that was in one of those units, the northeastern property that fronted Farrell Road, and he was quite concerned about the overlooking into his pool area and those type of things. So we made a conscious decision to not have any overlooking in that regard. So that's the method behind the madness there. So.
Yeah. All right. I don't really want to go on and do this because we keep, every time we look at it, we find something more. Just in terms of, I don't know if you had any.
I agree.
Did you want
to? There's a multitude of drawing anomalies that sort of don't make sense. I don't want to.
Yeah, no, look, I don't think it. I think you both understand our issues. There's a bit of frustration because this is the third time.
I'll just explain it. If you look at sheet 13, we've got some dashed lines, which I presume it's a lower floor plan, represent the floor above, and then there's some solid lines, which are partial, which are incomplete. Are they the same thing? So why are they different? Why is one dashed and the other one solid?
Well,
I'm just wondering, how is one supposed to read that plan?
I'm just, could you show?
It's a layout of units 3 and 4.
So this line and this line, they're different lines. So this is different to the
printer. Not your printing issue, is it?
I don't think so.
No. We're not going to go keep doing this, but there's, I suppose, just how you've responded to our previous deferral in terms of building massing and gap between building is top of mind. The inconsistencies in the plans make us very uncomfortable and we lose, I'll be very blunt, we lose confidence in relying on, and I've probably heard me say it before, one mistake, two mistake, third mistake, I'm going to be going over everything with a fine-tooth comb. And that's not our role. Yep. We're here to make decisions based on the information to date. And this has had, it's had a few goes at trying to get it right, and it's not right yet. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I think we'll just probably leave it at that. Yep. You understand where we're coming from.
Yep.
Okay.
I understand. Yep.
Great. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to thank everybody for their time. Thank you for your submissions. And I'm going to adjourn the meeting for us to formulate a resolution. With that, I'll kick you all out and you can go home.